Welcome to Picnic Climbers, a podcast for those who love getting outside,
going on epic adventures,
or chill ones,
and don't take themselves too seriously. Join us, Nate and Mo,
as we share our escapades into the great outdoors.
And don't forget the beer, eh?
Hello, listeners, and hey, Nate.
How are you doing, Mo?
I'm doing well today, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm doing good. What have we been up to today?
Today was a nice sleepy Saturday. We had a good lie-in, and then it was snowing outside, so we decided to bundle up and go to our local hill and bundle little baby up, and we went for a nice slow walk in the hills, and it was really nice. I love snow so much.
Yeah, it was absolutely beautiful, wasn't it? I mean, the classic like snow in the branches.
Yeah, it was a perfect time for it. By the time we were heading back to the car, it was more mud than snow.
Yeah.
It doesn't last long here, does it?
It's always amusing, because it's always amusing driving in the UK in the snow is always a bit of a fun one, because not quite in the same way as Canada. No one bothers with any sort of proper tyres here, because you just don't get snow very commonly, and so in all the car parks were all slipping and sliding around, so didn't see anyone get into any trouble, but it's always a little bit amusing and a little bit of fun.
Well, we're used to driving in the snow, and we still thought about it before going up some hills. We were good.
The other thing that I have seen more this season that has amused me, really, because this is the first year that we've been in the UK that's really had snow, and we've been up in the hills a couple of times in snowy conditions over the last couple of weeks, and what I found really interesting is how many people just kind of will carry like a snowboard or a set of skis up to the top of these grassy hills and slide down. I mean, there's hardly, you know, 2 inches of snow on the ground, but when you're the nearest ski resort is Switzerland or France.
You've got a few in Scotland.
Yeah, you kind of got to get out where you can, I suppose. So if that's the local farmer's hill, that's what it is. So that's been rather amusing the last few weeks.
And I mean, we're used to like ski resorts, but it still looked so fun. Like, I was definitely jealous.
Oh, I would have loved to have done it.
They all have, well, not they all, but I've seen a lot of those little toboggans. They're either red or blue. It seems to be the make. And there's so many kids like skidding around on them or being pulled or going down the hills. I'm so jealous.
I think they're like a supermarket special. I think they're only like £5 from a supermarket.
We should have got one. We weren't expecting this much snow. Last year, we had like a dusting one day, and it was like snow in the air, but then pretty much melted right away. But this year, we've had so much, which is amazing.
It's been really nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's been our day.
What are we doing now? Chilling.
Well, we're sat on the sofa recording episode 2 with drinks in our hands, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because it's a Saturday night.
It's a Saturday night. Exactly. So I'm drinking Winter Solstice,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, correct.
By Orca and the Eagle Brewing.
This is my home brew. Monica's being kind, and she's drinking my home brew, which she does say she enjoys. tell us what it is.
Well, it's called Winter Solstice, and it's a milk chai stout. Mm, delicious. It tastes very festive. He made it for Christmas, and I'm still enjoying it months later. What are you having?
I have got another homebrew that I've done, which is a white IPA, which is, it's really, really nice. I quite like it. It's a white IPA. If you don't know, it's a combo basically between a Belgian wit, wheat ale, and an IPA. So it's got the hoppiness, but it's kind of got the smoothness of a wit as well, although it's massively overcarbonated, so for me to pour a pint I need to use 2 pint glasses, and I just get way too much foam on the top. But there we are. That's, it's homebrew, and we live and we learn.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we're not here to talk about beer, are we?
No. What
we, although that was option 2 when we were discussing podcast topics, wasn't it?
We considered it briefly, didn't we? But we thought maybe the outdoors.
I have not enough to say on beer. Nathan, you could talk for hours about it. But anyway, moving
maybe,
right along.
Maybe be a different group of friends to talk about that one. So what are we going to talk about today, my love?
Hiking, my favorite, and the various stereotypes mostly the stereotypes that we've been, because we actually have stories to go along with them, and maybe a few that we've seen along the way. That's today's topic, isn't it?
So when you say hiking, what do we mean by that? We can go by different words in different countries.
Yeah, I found that so interesting when we moved to the UK. Having grown up in Canada, and hiking is quite a typical term, which is different than going for a walk. When you say walking here, it's kind of the same thing, but pretty much it just means walking along a nature trail of some kind. But more often than not, there'll be some sort of elevation and or view or endpoint or destination. But mostly it's just a walk up a mountain, well, or in a forest even.
I would say that walk is used in the UK in the same way that hike is used in North America.
Yeah.
That they're pretty much synonyms. I mean, if you were in North America, a walk would be you're leaving your house, you're walking down the road.
Yeah, to like the supermarket. Along the block or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to just kind of along a paved road, but no.
Or like in a park where it's flat and you're chatting with the gals.
Yeah. I think it's funny. I think Brits have a lot more words for hiking than North Americans do. You can describe it anything from going on a walk, going on a ramble in the hills, tramping, which is also a New Zealand term we learned when we were down there. But I think if you were just kind of heading out for a casual walk down the pavement here, you'd probably more refer to it as going for a stroll.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, most people, if they go on what we would call a hike, they'll just say, oh, we're going for a big walk in the hills.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. There are more hills than anything else here. They have some things that they call mountains, but
we've got a few mountains. We've got a few mountains.
Well, we've debated the definition of a mountain a little bit, haven't we? And there is no geographical, actual term or definition, I mean, of mountain. Like, there's so many versions of what it is. It's up to interpretation. I think it has to have a certain height or a certain pointiness or something. Not just slightly higher elevation than sea level, but anyway, there you go, to each their own.
When you don't have the massive mountains, you got to be proud of what you do have.
Yeah. Well, what was the mountain we hiked? We hiked last summer. We walked up the highest mountain in England. Scafell Pike. How tall is it?
It's 978 meters.
900. It's not even 1,000 meters.
The other two.
And that's the tallest mountain. It was fun. It was beautiful.
The other two tallest peaks, as in Ben Nevis in Scotland and Snowdon in Wales, are above 1,000 meters.
They are. And they also are a little bit more dramatic.
They're rockier and they're steeper. Well, Scafell's definitely steep.
It's steep. It's very steep. It's a good hike, and I would definitely have considered that a hike, not just a walk in the hills, which is what I consider a lot of what we do in England. But there you go.
Regardless. So when we talk about hiking stereotypes or walking stereotypes, I think just it's kind of just the kind of the people that you see on the trail, isn't it? And just the, I guess as well, partly the transition that we make from novice beginner without much of a clue of what's going on towards maybe more seasoned and prepared multi-day hiker. So I think we're just gonna have a little chat about some of the things that we might commonly see out there, or like Monica says, that the what we have been, I suppose, as we've been hiking.
So I feel like novice hikers generally start off in one of two camps. And Nate and I actually went on the same hike, not together, when we were both beginner backpackers, kind of on some of our first overnight trips. We did the same hike, which we'll talk about the hike in a second, and very much came at it from opposite ends of the spectrum. So I guess the spectrum would be level of preparedness, would you say? So some novices are vastly overprepared, thinking like ready for anything that could possibly go wrong and just have like a week's worth of stuff for a night, or very underprepared and don't really know what they're getting into, and therefore are underprepared and don't have the things that maybe would afford them a bit more of comfort. So we're gonna tell you those two stories, but first of all, tell us about the hike, Nate.
About Garibaldi.
Yeah, tell us about the
set
the scene.
So Garibaldi Provincial Park is One of the most accessible provincial parks from Vancouver that has really well established and good multi-day hiking routes. It's within 2 hours of Vancouver, and it gets a huge amount of traffic through the summer in terms of like locals, a lot of students, huge numbers of international tourists up there every summer. The trails are really well maintained. There are very established campsites with shelters for cooking in and so on. The area is incredibly beautiful. The Garibaldi Lake is just picturesque beyond belief. Beautiful, beautiful glacial lake that's surrounded by tall mountains and glaciers. And the options from there for some pretty beginner-friendly scrambles and some really attainable summits. So it's an amazing area for people doing kind of getting into multi-day hiking. And so because of that, you do see some rather amusing things on the trails up there.
Yeah, it's really picturesque. Like if you kind of Google West Coast of Canada places to go or beautiful scenery, like you're going to get one of two things. You're going to get the Rockies and the beautiful mountain range between British Columbia and Alberta with like what is there, Lake Louise, no, like
Banff, Jasper, yeah, National Park. Yeah, Lake Louise.
Yeah, and then the other spot would be like this spot where we were talking about, Garibaldi Lake, and it's like that that teal color, like it looks like Kool-Aid, it looks fake. And it's got great reflections. It's often very, very still. And I think it's the minerals that make it such a, like a bright, crazy blue color. And yeah, the forests are just like mesmerizing. It's gorgeous. But the trail itself is just very straightforward. It's like wide enough to like have three or four people. Pardon?
It's well maintained.
It's well maintained. Yeah. And it's just switchbacks the whole way. Like it's just, if you can walk up a ramp, you can walk up the trail. It's about 9 kilometers to the lake. So yeah, very doable. Anyway, do you want to tell us about your first trip then up this Garibaldi Trail to the campsite the lake?
Yeah, so this was our first overnight trip. There was myself and two mates. And we were planning on doing a weekend of climbing. And we had our bouldering mats, and we were going to head up to Squamish and do some bouldering in the boulder fields at the base of the Chief. But the weather just was not playing with us, and it was just too wet to climb. And so I convinced these two guys that I was with, my two mates, that it would be a good use of our time to go and hike into the Alpine and spend the night there. We had all the gear that we needed, or that we thought we needed, with us. We thought we might as well kind of salvage the weekend and still have a night out somewhere. Secretly, I was hoping that that's what we would decide. I think they were a lot more interested in going bouldering, but I had wanted to go up into Garibaldi to see what was up there. So I was maybe a bit more prepared than they were. And this kind of ended in quite a hilarious and renowned weekend that we've laughed about for several years following. Thankfully, well, we were all okay, and there was never any risk. It just wasn't the most comfortable of trips. It was fine for me. It was these two lads that were at a more unfortunate time.
So you've always had a bit more of a plan in your head, haven't you? A bit more sensible.
I maybe had more thoughts in my head than I was letting on. But I mean, at the same time, I didn't really know what I was doing. Like I said, it was my first overnight trip as well. But these two friends of mine who won't mind me sharing this story had a bit more of an amusing time of it. They were very set on being as light as possible. And they'd got it in their heads that they, you know, if they're going for a one night trip, all they would need is kind of their like 32 litre day pack, essentially. the kind of the two things that immediately stand out to me now is as being problematic in that plan is firstly your tent and secondly a sleeping bag. Now the ways that we got around, or that they got around that on this trip, is firstly Craig carried the tent in his arms. It was it was one of these kind of fairly bulky three-man summer tents.
Not meant to go backpacking in, right? Like a family would sleep in it.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a backpacking tent, a lightweight tent. It was just a family tent, like you say. And then the sleeping bag, they decided that they didn't actually need sleeping bags. And they had found at MEC, which is the Canadian equivalent of like Go Outdoors, just kind of your standard wholesale outdoors shop that has like something from everything, from all that you need.
Mountain Equipment Co-op. We'll probably say MEC a lot.
So they had found in MEC these survival bivy bags. and they thought that this would be a great alternative to a sleeping bag, and that they wouldn't need to carry a sleeping bag with them. And it would mean that they could go out into the backcountry for a night pretty much whenever they wanted without much gear. So we set off from the trailhead. I had recently acquired on Craigslist a secondhand North Face tent. And I had my MEC sleeping bag in my pack, so I was good to go. And they had their little day packs, and they were absolutely stoked. They thought it was going to be the best night of their lives.
They were making fun of you, weren't they? Like with your big bag and all your stuff, while they had these little.
Yes, I was carrying a lot more than they were. So we got up in a place called Taylor Meadows. It's about 8 kilometers from the trailhead. We dropped our bags, set up our tents, had lunch, and decided to use the rest of the day hiking up to Panorama Ridge, which is, like the name suggests, you get these incredible panoramic views of Garibaldi Lake, the glaciers surrounding and the mountains in the distance, and it's absolutely wonderful. You're right up on top of the lake. It was, like I already alluded to, a quite wet weekend. So we're up there in July. You getting close to the peaks are about 2,000 meters, and there was still quite a lot of snow. And so we were tromping across snow quite a lot in the rain. And that was sort of our afternoon on that first day. The food situation was rather interesting. I think there was a lot of chocolate pudding. I had carried up a tin of baked beans and a couple of sausages and managed to cook those and have bangers and beans. And I think I'm pretty sure they just had instant noodles. But it really sort of started...
As you do.
Well, yeah. It really started getting interesting, though, as we were sort of settling down for the night. I got into my tent... into my sleeping bag. It was very cozy and warm. It was lovely. The rain's still coming down outside, so I think it was probably about 8 o'clock or so when we were heading for the tent, because it was raining. There wasn't much else to do. And I kind of heard from their tent their excited voices, like, "Oh, this is awesome. This is so good. Like, we do this all the time. Like, I'm so warm in here. I'm so comfortable." And this is, of course, to the backdrop of the crinkle of their bin bags.
I feel like you should describe what did you call them, a bivy bag? What is that for people? I don't know what that would be.
Imagine like
it's like tin foil.
Yeah, it's a tin foil sack.
And they're meant to, like, if you get in trouble in the outdoors or if someone twists an ankle, you kind of cover them, right? And it's reflecting their own body heat back to them. That's the basic idea.
Yes.
Like, that's the same that'll be in first aid kits even. It's like if someone has a bit of hypothermia or whatever, you put it on. It's not a blanket. It's like paper thin, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, carry on.
It's like a tinfoil sack. And they were stoked about it. They were loving it. And then they quietened down, they settled down, and we were sort of starting to drift off to sleep. About half an hour, maybe it was, that went by, that I kind of heard from the next tent, like, oh, Craigie, are you still awake? And he's like, yeah, man. It's like, is the inside of your bivy sack wet? Yeah, it is. There's water droplets, and of course these things are they don't. Well, they basically just, like we said, reflect all of the heat back into the body, and so these boys were sweating in their clothes in their bivy sack, and it was all just collecting on the inside of their bin bags, and they were soaking wet in about half an hour, 45 minutes. Again, yes, it's July, but we're up close to 2,000 meters. On a rainy weekend, so they are quickly getting cold. I think it was probably at this point where I just kind of dropped off to sleep, unaware of the rest of the night. But they had a horrible night. Didn't get more than about half an hour of sleep at a time. I think they were quite cold. They told me the next day that they were considering getting in my sleeping bag with me. I think was their plan at about 3 a.m, which I wouldn't have taken to. Well, too.
The poor things.
They were miserable.
That's so, I think, sad.
At one point, they were talking about hiking back down to the car.
Did they have mats? Like, you guys didn't bring up, like, inflatable mats or pads or anything, did you?
To be honest, I can't remember.
Was it just them on the ground?
I'd imagine that they had some sort of mat.
Okay.
But, yeah, I can't actually remember. This was a few years ago.
I hope so.
But, yeah, so I think as soon as I started stirring in the morning, they were very quick to Nate, are you awake? And I was like, yes. And so we got up and had breakfast, and they kind of looked a little bit shell-shocked.
I can't believe they ever went back outside.
it's one of those, like, baptisms of fire, isn't it? You either, after an experience like that, you either never do it again, or you just want to kind of do it better, I suppose. Thankfully for us, it was a case of, well, we're going to do this better.
And you did. You are all much better outdoorsmen now, and I would trust any of the three of you to plan a trip.
I think most people have these stories from early on, don't they? But anyway, so that was probably a bit of a story of, we didn't really know what we were getting ourselves in for. We kind of were just out for a bit of a laugh, and we were always safe enough. Like, we were never really in serious risk. It was just maybe less comfortable than we would have initially desired. So that was my first situation, or my first example. What about you, Monica? How did your first trip backcountry
well,
go?
Yeah, it was equally hilarious, but for totally different reasons. We definitely fell on the other end of the spectrum of just being wildly overprepared and just bringing up way too many things. If you saw our bags that we'd packed for one night, you'd think that we were going on a month-long trek. But anyway, yeah, so it was me and three other friends that I had met working at a summer camp for kids, and we were all kind of camp counselors and had spent a lot of time outside, and I led hiking throughout the summer, and so these were people that I'd hiked with over the course of the summer, and we decided to start a hiking club, which didn't last beyond this one hike, but it was a good time anyway. So it was the same trail. We went up to Garibaldi Lake. We were planning to hopefully do Panorama Ridge as well. So this was a weekend, I think it was the first or second weekend in September. Couldn't have been better weather. It was glorious, beautiful sunshine, just absolutely stellar. It was going to be great. So there was the four of us. There was two boys and two girls. And we kind of all decided, with the very minimal communication we had with each other beforehand, that we'd kind of just bring a bunch of food and just share it and just have a good time, which meant that pretty much all of us brought enough food for four people, so we had overflowing bags with food. I think I brought like three or four outfits because I thought, you never know, like, there was a lake, so we might get wet. Like, I just brought way too much stuff. I think my friend had like a full-on bath towel just in case.
You both had pillows as well.
We both
brought
pillows. Yeah. Which, I mean, sure, that's a luxury if you want to carry up a pillow. Now we definitely just like squish up our coat and stuff it in our sleeping bag. But yeah, we had pillows, mat, like just way more things that we could possibly use.
What were some of the food that you brought up?
Well, I brought like a lot of fruit, a lot of veggies, and a lot of crackers and cheese and that kind of thing. I think I brought half of everything back down at least. My other friend brought like full, like, I can't remember if it was boxes of crackers or like a bag of bread, like nice bread. I can't remember which, but, and a full brand new unopened jar of Nutella, like one of the big ones, which we like dipped into, but that's heavy. And then the guys brought like multiple cans of soup and beans and something for dessert, and all with like lots of garbage, not easy things that you can just crinkle up, like
lots of packaging,
and it was just resting in our massive bags. So anyway, got a bit of a late start, started up to the campsite, and like I said, it was amazing weather. So we got to the first campsite that we were planning on camping at, and there were no spots. So some of the spots you can book ahead, and the others are just first come first serve. We hadn't anticipated getting there so late. We left really early, but there was like a bike race. The road from Vancouver to this place is like a very famous, goes along a very famous highway. I'm pretty sure it's a Sea to Sky, isn't it? Lovely drive. But there was a bike race going on, so we got stuck in that. So we were very late to the trailhead and had a late start, and then we went swimming along the way, and we had these massive bags, and like, I think one of the friends, yeah, we had a speaker, we had a big speaker attached to a backpack that we were playing music. Anyway, we were so obnoxious. We got to the campsite, there were no campsite, like, tent spots left, but we still, it was a gorgeous day, so we're like, oh no, will we be able to get a spot to stay? Should we just turn around and go home before it's too late? It is illegal to just put a tent wherever you want, and there are lots of rangers because it's a very popular spot, so you don't want to just put it wherever. Like, it's, you want to keep the surrounding area looking nice, and you also don't want to get fined. So we were kind of in this spot where we thought, well, some people might be heading down, so there might be tent spots opening up. By the time we want to go to sleep, people might have gone down. Bless you, Rowan. So that was an option. But there was also another campground like 3 or 4 kilometers away. So what we planned was, we dropped our backpacks and we decided, you know what, we're here, it's beautiful, let's just risk it. We'll go up to Panorama Ridge without our bags, so we'll be quicker, and then we'll come back down.
Which, I mean, from where you were, when you left your packs, you were a good 7 kilometers to the top of Panorama Ridge.
Oh, easy, yeah. And that means 7 there, 7 back. So, and we were already tired.
And it's not flat either, is it?
No, it's quite steep. So yeah, we'd come 9 kilometers up a trail with big backpacks. We dropped them off. We went up Panorama Ridge. And that was like the best part of the day, because it was just beautiful. Because it was late in the afternoon, most people had come and gone. When we got to the top, it was gorgeous. It was kind of like that golden hour as we came back, like just before sunset. But by the time we got back to our packs, it was pitch black. And we had, I think, one head torch. What is it called?
Headlamp.
Headlamp, thank you. One headlamp between the four of us, and somebody had a phone with a lamp. So anyway, we looked around at all the campsites. Nobody had left. There was no campsites open. So after doing 20-odd kilometers that day, and none of us were, like, had done much hiking before, we had no choice but to make it to this other campground in the pitch black. So we walked with the lights in between us along this trail that we didn't know, with our massive packs on, and we made it to a campsite. We thought we found a tent site, and we just managed to get set up in the pitch black, and then we opened all our cans of soup. And to be honest, by that point, we were glad for all we brought. Although, I'm pretty sure me and my friend were so exhausted. The boys set up both tents and cooked the food, and we just stared at the stars. We were very tired. Anyway, we had a great dinner. And then we woke up the next morning. We had a great night, obviously, because we had sleeping bags and I think blankets and pillows and the works.
Luxury.
But we woke up and realized that all the food that we'd eaten was packaged, and we had so much rubbish, and you can't leave it there, and there's no like bins or anything. So we had to pack it up. And so we had a roll of bin bags, because of course somebose had thought to bring
an entire roll of bin bags. Oh dear me.
I know. So we just got a bunch of them out and put them in. But they were just like thin bin bags, and we had like soup cans and all of this stuff. And our bags, remember, were overflowing. So all of this rubbish couldn't fit back in because somehow it's bigger and we just packed poorly. So what we did is we tied them to the bottom of our sacks.
Classy.
Classy, right? So I think I took some of the, like, the boxes, and the boys decided to take the soup cans and, like, the heavier things and the messy things. But, of course, these thin bags are, like, rattling back and forth against the boys' legs. By the time we got back to the car park, the boys' calves were bleeding and covered in soup. And it was awful.
That's terrible.
It was awful. I don't know. We kept saying, are you guys okay? Like, should we repackage it? And they're like, no, no, it's fine. I don't think they realized that, like, the sharp edges of the cans had cut through the bags and were cutting their calves as they, like, banged.
How do you not over realize that?
I don't know. We were also exhausted. And I think we were just, like, just head down, trudging with our massive bags.
Wow.
Yeah. We got down and we put everything in, and it was, like, quick goodbyes, and off we went. And we never hiked together again. We had a great time.
It's always that, isn't it? You look back, it's an incredible experience. But yeah, definitely could have been done better.
Oh my goodness, you would just do it so differently, wouldn't you?
Oh.
Yeah, so we both laugh at ourselves in those trips. Never again have I brought a pillow and or a full jar of Nutella.
I think it all, again, it all just depends how far you're going, how long you're going out for. But no, it's, I suppose there's some general things that maybe to avoid. But we've seen, I mean, in terms of other things that I've, because we've hiked that trail numerous times, haven't we, over the years.
Since then, yes.
Since then, yeah. There's been all sorts of other people who were in similar positions to us that first time. I think some of my favorites was so one of the mountains up there is Black Tusk, and it's a scramble. It's again, you know, coming up 2,500 meters above sea level, and we were up at the base of the scramble for Black Tusk, kind of on our way down. And we saw coming up the trail behind us in sort of like slightly driving snow, a young lad in a tracksuit with an empty 500 milliliter water bottle, just looking quite haggard. And you know, we're unsure how his day ended. Hopefully, I mean, assumedly he got back down, got back down okay. But it was certainly one of those cases of you know, I hope he's all right. He doesn't seem like he's got quite what he needs to be up here, assumedly he made it. Those stories of unpreparedness are of course at odds with the opposing stereotype, which is a lightweight minimalists, which is it's a noble aim, but not really for us, is it, my dear?
No, it's never been our style, has it? Well, first of all, it tends to be like you need more gear, don't you? Like, it has to be the perfect gear, the right gear. You need things that do multiple purposes, which I guess probably are worth it in the long run. But yeah,
But it's even things like sawing off the end of your toothbrush. You're really like counting grams. You know, and like you say, making sure you've got like the most ultra light.
The bare rain minimum. Jacket,
yeah, and like you're counting your calories, any excess packaging is left behind. You know, you've only got enough soap for the time that you're out there. Like those types of things. There's no luxury. There's no extra
comfort. Yeah.
Or just, well, because that's what's sacrificed, isn't it? Comfort is what's sacrificed in the aim of minimalism.
And I think the longer the trip is, the more we'll kind of like take everything out of any packaging and kind of minimize that kind of thing.
But like we say, it's a noble aim.
Yeah, aim.
And good gear makes a big difference.
Yeah, it definitely does, but so does comforts. Like, I don't often, like, bring flip-flops or some sort of sandals to a campground if we're hiking in. But when I do, it's so nice.
Having like, a camp shoe.
Having a camp shoe, taking your boots off at the end of the day. Most of the time, it's not worth the wait, but yeah, it's so nice. But good gear does make a big difference. Good gear that's broken in properly and you're used to and can use I had great gear on that first hike we went after we got married. So we went on a honeymoon, we came back, we didn't really have jobs, either of us, and we had a few things. My sister graduated and we were going to go to the ceremony. We didn't really have anything else planned. It was just, life was wide open for us, wasn't it? And we got a lot of like gift cards for outdoor gear for our wedding because we weren't planning on sticking around in the city we were living in. People didn't give us like, you know, cutlery and spatulas and fancy things like that. We just got outdoor gear. So I was like fully outkitted in brand new boots, rain jacket, like pack, like, what are they called?
Gaiters.
Like I just had brand new gear head to toe, which felt amazing. I was so excited.
You looked amazing.
Thank you very much. It was so fun. But then we pulled up to the trailhead and okay, so it was a point A to point B hike, wasn't it? It's called the Juan de Fuca Trail on the west coast of Vancouver Island. If you've heard of the West Coast Trail, it's just south of there.
It's just south of the West Coast Trail. I think it's typically done in about 4 days, if I remember. I think it's about 42 kilometers. Yeah. I think it's about marathon length.
And there's lots more campsites. So you could do it anywhere from like, well, 1 day to 7 days. I think there's enough campsites to kind of spread it out. Which school trips come and do bits and pieces of it. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to do this kind of right after we got married with all our new gear and try it out. We didn't really know about the trail very much.
We'd done our research.
Yeah, we'd read up about it, definitely. But I think getting there, it was harder than maybe I'd imagined it would be. I thought I was fitter than I was, possibly. We'd eaten a lot of food.
Honeymoon.
Must have been it. Anyway, that being said, we showed up. It was a there and back. No, it wasn't a there and back again. Sorry. It was a point A to point B hike. It wasn't a loop, which means we had to have a way of getting home without walking all the way back again. So the great genius plan was to drive to the end of it. And leave our car at the end so that when we got to the end of the trail, we could zip on home. And then we hitchhiked. We tried to hitchhike to the start of the trailhead.
It was a very successful hitchhiking adventure. It was the one and only time we've ever done it. It was very amusing.
Oh my goodness. It was not your typical hitchhiking experience.
We got two different pickups, didn't we? The first one that picked us up was quite a typical surfer dude who was only able to give us a ride halfway
to the surfing beach.
The surfing beach was halfway along the trail. So we were sat in the back of his pickup, next to a surfboard, and he took us about half the distance, and then he chucked us off on the side of the road, and we had to wait for another car to come. And when that car did come along,
well, let's just stop at the surfer dude. Do you remember? He was really sweet. Like, we couldn't fit in the front of his truck, so he stuck us in the back. But he felt so bad. He's like, "You guys are gonna be cold," like, because it was back roads and he was kind of going fast in his pickup truck. So he got like, he dug around in the cab of his truck and pulled out all these sweatshirts and all of these like hiking.
He was looking after you.
Yeah. He like piled us up with warmth in the back and was like, "There you go, you'll be all right." And then dropped us off halfway, and then we got picked up by a second vehicle.
This happened to be a police vehicle, a cop car. We were stood on the side of the highway with our thumbs out
and a little sign.
Yeah, and we couldn't tell it was a cop car from the front. But then as soon as it went past, we're like, oh, we're not so sure about that.
He slowed down and stopped.
He stopped about 100 metres down the road, slams his truck into reverse, comes hurtling back up the road towards us, at which point
we thought we were going to get fined. Yeah. Turns out it's not illegal to hitchhike. It's illegal to pick up hitchhikers. So dodged a bullet there.
It worked out for us. And what was it he said? He said he'd rather get us to where we were going safely than be called to an accident where we'd been hit, because he didn't really like where we were standing. So we got a ride in the back of a police car to the trailhead of the...
Wrong, though. That was the problem. He only was going to the town that was close to the trailhead, and that was one of the problems, is that he's like, "Oh, this is pretty close to the trailhead." And it was actually like 5 or so kilometers uphill to the actual trailhead, just along a road. So that's, like, we got to the trailhead, and we'd just been hiking up a road for however long. And there was this old geologist guy that passed us at one point. This is such a rabbit trail. Do you remember?
No.
And he pulled over, and he's like, oh, what are you guys doing? And he talked to us, and we're like, oh, can we, like, hitch a ride? And he's like, oh, I'm only going a couple kilometers. I'm not going right to the trailhead. And then he zipped away, and we're like, but you could have brought us those clubs. Do you not? No. You, like, talked about some gems, and he was kind of old-timery and super funny.
No,
anyway, that happened. We got to the trailhead, and we still had a lot of kilometers to go, and it was very muddy. And back to what we were originally talking about, gear. I was in all this brand new gear, which means my backpack, which was secondhand, so new to me, I hadn't fitted it very properly to my body because I didn't really know how. My boots were brand new. I'd worn them around the house as we were, like, packing for this trip, which was not enough.
And they were definitely, we'd splurged on your boots for sure.
Yeah, it was like a wedding gift.
Zamberlin, top quality Italian made one piece of leather boots, stiff as anything.
So for those who don't know it, they're very stiff. So the whole sole is, I forget what it's called, but it's not really bendy, which ends up helping, and it's so comfortable and really good now. But yeah, it's just not flexible at all. It didn't have give in the right places, and it was all made from one piece of leather, so there's just not a lot of wiggle room. So my poor feet. Anyway, I was very, very sore and thought that I was going to come home and return all of my gear, and I thought, this sucks. But we made it back, and I didn't return any of it because eventually I broke it all in, and it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. But yes, knowing your gear and what you need to do in order to be comfortable.
Comfort makes or breaks the trip, doesn't it?
It really does.
So what would you say, Monica, is the real reason why we can't be minimalists?
Because we're picnic hikers, my love. We love to eat good food.
So food is the real reason we cannot be minimalist hikers.
Yes, that is the real reason. Who wants to get to a campground at the end of, like, hiking 20 kilometers through the forest and have, like, boring, bland food? Nobody.
No, you gotta be able to eat well. The way I see it, there's three options when it comes to food. When you're hiking, when you're multi-day hiking, and it's kind of what do you prioritize and what is sacrificed for that priority. So the ways that I like to think of it is that it's all about the calories, which means that taste is irrelevant, or it's all about the taste and so the weight is irrelevant, or it's all about the weight and the cost is irrelevant.
Exactly. And I feel like we definitely tend towards the last two, depending on the length of the trip. Mm-hmm. I will never forget one friend we made on a hike. We were up a mountain in New Zealand, and we were kind of, we did the regular mountain that everybody goes up and down called Avalanche Peak. But then there was a ridge connecting it to another mountain, and then you could kind of go down to make it a really big loop, which was not the traditional tourist route. So we carried on to do the ridge, and another guy kind of followed us and was like, can I join? And so we made friends with this guy and spent most of the day hiking with him, and he was really fun. I forget his name, but
he was German.
He was.
That's all I remember.
Anyway, he was great, great fun. And it was a sketchy ridge, which was probably just beyond my comfort zone. So it was really nice for me to be between Nate and this guy whose name I forget, because they kind of both could help me and I felt safer. So it was such a fun day. First time we ever went scree skiing.
First time for you.
Oh, first time for me. 10 out of 10, good time. Anyway,
what was his lunch?
Oh my goodness. When we sat down and we pulled out our lunch, Nate and I had, like, sausages and crackers and cheese, I think, and, like, and fruit and a granola bar and probably some chocolate, because we always bring chocolate on a mountain. And he pulled out his lunch, and it was like a massive, like a shoebox size Tupperware of Cheerios. So, like, ultra lightweight, like just Cheerios, like breakfast cereal Cheerios. And he poured in his bottle of water to the Tupperware. And he just ate Cheerios with water.
Probably one of the worst combinations out there that you can imagine.
I think I stared at him and he was like, oh, it's light and cheap. And we're like, my friend.
So I think you took pity on him and you shared half of your lunch with him.
I did. How can you let that stand? No. I always bring too much food because 9 times out of 10, there's some boy that's not brought enough food who needs some more food.
There's a there's a lot of boys out there who can thank you for saving them from hunger and misery.
Well, yeah, I just always bring a better picnic. I had one friend that I used to go climbing with in uni, and he would bring a bag, like a freezer bag of rice. Here, have a carrot stick with some hummus, please. Thank you. Just make me feel better.
Easy nutrients. Yeah.
So that would be calories.
Right.
And weight, but taste is irrelevant. Not our favorite camp.
The other option, especially, which is favorable if you're doing longer distance stuff, is there are a number of companies now that make really good, or at least passable, dehydrated meals. They're typically quite expensive, but they're super simple. I mean, you just open them up, put boiling water in them, mix it around, and then you're good to go. And they're definitely the easiest and the cheapest option. But there's not a lot of fun in it. At that point, you're just eating it to eat it.
Calories in your belly, which is exactly what you want if you're on 4 or 5 days or more. And by the fourth day, you're not really wanting to chop an onion and fry it all over your little camp stove. Boiling water is about all that you have.
Yeah, but our favorite of these three stereotypes would be where it's all about taste, but weight is irrelevant. So we have hiked up steaks. We've hiked up sausages. We've hiked up all sorts of heavy water filled food. Generally on our shorter trips, boxes of wine, cans of beer, bottles of beer, in fact, at times as well. And really just kind of try to make the most glamorous and extra meal that we possibly can as far away from the car as we possibly can.
Yeah. I'll never forget those smoked salmon and sprouts and cheese. What's the nice cheese that you have with smoked salmon?
Cream cheese.
And we heated up the wraps.
Yeah.
Just because
that was actually a surprisingly light one, though. Like, if you think about it, smoked salmon doesn't weigh very much. Like, alfalfa doesn't weigh a thing.
They would just have a lot of packaging.
And pesto was the other thing that went on those.
That became really, a favorite, really nice. Didn't it?
That was a really good one.
So good. And so high in calories and fat and good stuff.
It was a really good hiking meal. A lunch that we did that one. I found when we were in New Zealand, one of my favorite things that I brought back from New Zealand was the best hiking cookbook that I've ever found, which is it organized all the recipes, not by just kind of the most lightweight possible. And my criticism with a lot of backpacking cookbooks is that it all starts with a whole chapter at the beginning with how you should buy a dehydrator, and this is big investment and lightweight as possible, and I sometimes that's absolutely the way to go, but not always. And so what I really like about this book that I found is it has different sections based on the length of trip that you're going on. So it has like weekend tramps. And so there's a whole bunch of recipes, breakfast, lunch and dinner, with if you're just going for a weekend trip and weight doesn't matter quite so much. Mm. And then there's a whole section on multi-day tramps, which are more lightweight. There are a few recipes in there that recommend using a dehydrator and things. And there's luxury camping weekends, there's family camping weekends. It allows you to choose kind of what you want sort of from these three options.
Well, I'm sure eventually we'll do a cooking in the backcountry episode, and you can share some of your favorite recipes and our favorite or go-to meals that are quick and easy and high in calorie and low in weight or work or whatever.
I just think it was a really, really clever way of doing it, and it's certainly the best that I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the stereotypes that we mostly think of in terms. I mean, there's all the funny ones, but we don't really want to poke fun at everybody or just talk about things that we haven't experienced. So, yeah, mostly it's that scale of overprepared to underprepared or what kind of meals people are pulling out. We like to...
If you have a favorite backcountry meal that is one of your go-tos, we would absolutely love to hear it. So feel free to email us any recipes that you have that you like at picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Alternatively, if you need good ideas, we'll come on a hike with us and we'll cook for you.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
If you enjoyed listening along, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment on iTunes.
If you want to get in touch, follow us on Instagram at Picnic Climbers or email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Until next time, Picnic Climbers.